Hello, it's Melissa Cohen, creator of the Relationship Roadmap Home Study Program. And in today's lesson, we are going to be talking about sex and intimacy. Woohoo! You may notice in this lesson that I'm speaking in a more lighthearted tone, even though some of these issues are in fact quite painful. And when they come up in couples therapy, it really is quite a raw topic to talk about. Nevertheless, I am talking in this tone because I want to set forth my point of view, which is that sex, after you are finished with your procreation, the only point of sex is it's the way grown-ups like to play. So sex is healthy, it's necessary, it's good for us, and it really is play. It should be looked at as a way to connect with your partner in a way that only the two of you can. So before we get into all the good and fun stuff, let's talk about a few mindsets that really keep us from having all the sex that we want. So there's just no point in sugarcoating it. When we begin our journey through parenthood, sex is often the farthest things from our mind. And there really are several good reasons for this. So, for many couples, the process of procreation really takes the sexy right out of sex. After all, when you start, quote, trying to have a baby, sex is no longer just for play and connection. It actually has a higher purpose that has nothing to do really with your pleasure or connection. It has to do with having a child. And when a woman does become pregnant, whether spontaneously or through infertility treatment, this is really the first time that they experience the sensation of their body not quite being their own. Actually, for many women who have to undergo invasive infertility treatment, they really start associating sex with negative experiences, with a feeling of failure in their body. And these feelings tend to come up with each pregnancy if infertility treatment is needed. But regardless of the way in which you become pregnant, again, mothers begin the journey to motherhood a little bit earlier than men because their body is not their own and they are already in the care of their child, just keeping it alive inside of their body. At the same time, though, men often have intrusive thoughts about having sex with their pregnant wife, especially when she is really starting to show or when they can feel the baby kick inside of her. It becomes real to them in a way that often is conflictual, that yes, this woman is my love and my partner and the woman who I love to have sex with, but at the same time, my child is inside of her, and that's kind of freaking me out a bit. So it's critical that you start this journey of parenthood together with regard to your sex life in the very, very early stages. You got to start it open and honest because your years of procreation result in changes in sex drive and what feels good to you. And it's critical to have an ongoing open conversation about what feels good now. And frankly, this is a subject that comes up well past the procreative years, because in perimenopause, menopause, and afterward, there really are a lot of changes in what feels good in your body. And the more that you're able to talk about them without shame, with an attitude of, I just want to know you, I just want to have a deep knowledge of you, then you're able to find a way to have intimacy that feels good to both of you. Once we have children, many women find it difficult to turn off their mommy brain and focus on pleasure because there's always something else pulling for your time and energy, leaving only the leftovers for intimacy. Many moms tell me that sex feels like just one more thing they have to do, which is really sad because I often challenge them by asking them how good they are at receiving pleasure. After all, the thought that sex is something they have to do is based on the belief that sex is about giving pleasure, not receiving. Once they think about it in that way, many women are surprised to find that they, in fact, have de facto sort of deprioritized their own sexual satisfaction. They're taking it away from themselves because they don't feel connected to themselves sexually when they are in mommy mode for so long. When we are deeply entrenched in mommy mode or daddy mode, we are making decisions with our children as the highest priority at all times, and we tend to lose ourselves. Again, I mentioned it in an earlier lesson, but I cannot believe how many couples that I treat who come to me actually with problems of disconnection in their relationship, and yet they refuse to put a lock on their bedroom door because one of their children might need them. Let me reiterate. You deserve to have privacy and to be separate from your kids. Believe me, if they need you, they will let you know by screaming, by pounding on the door. So if your marriage is a priority and sex usually occurs in your bed, that lock can be the difference between really relaxing and enjoying loving touch and rushing through the motions without feeling connected at all. It also, frankly, saves you from an unnecessarily embarrassing moment when a child walks in on sex. Fathers, of course, also have changes in their sex drive when their family is growing. Whether it's the stress of providing for their family or feeling like, you know, they have two jobs like women do, one at the workplace and one at home. And there's always something else that needs doing, always something else that needs their attention. So again, they often have issues of stress affecting their sex drive. But men usually don't lose the sexual connection with themselves. And by that, I mean they still masturbate and make sure that they experience orgasm as part of their almost like part of their hygiene. It's part of their routine, so they don't really lose connection with their sexual self the way that women often do. Not surprisingly, because they're still connected with their sexual self, it is often upon the man to initiate a sexual encounter with his spouse. And that, of course, means that he also risks rejection much more than his spouse might. Whoever is the initiator of sex in your relationship, that person is only going to reach out for affection so many times if every time that they do, their hand gets slapped away. So there needs to be a differentiation between sex and affection and intimacy. So many couples avoid physical closeness when intercourse is off the table. So this is a big mistake for a number of reasons. One, it sets up a paradigm where sex is the only form of touching that is valued. And for some, it goes even farther. Intercourse is not valued unless there is an orgasm. So instead of the goal being to really connect and feel the closeness with each other, it's, you know, chasing an orgasm. And if you don't have an orgasm, there's a sense of failure. So regardless of how often you have intercourse or how often you have an orgasm, intimacy and affection are very important to foster your feeling of connection in the relationship. So the goal of touch is to show love in a physical way, not to pursue an orgasm. So when we get in this pattern of avoiding physical closeness because intercourse is off the table, these long dry spells occur. Most couples find it difficult to go from virtually no touching to having sex. At least they find it more difficult if alcohol is not involved. So that's one of the reasons I really encourage couples to touch with affection every day, whether they are hoping for sex or not. Hugging and kissing, massage and cuddling, anything that feels good through touch enhances your intimacy and bridges the gap so that sex becomes more accessible when you're actually ready to give and receive in that way. Another issue that I see in many couples, especially in their early years of parenting when they have children under the age of five, for mothers, they may be on touch overload, whereas fathers tend to feel touch starved. So what do I mean by this? So for years, the mother may be on touch overload because she's either holding the baby, nursing the baby, bathing the baby. And when they're older, toddlers tend to crawl all over their caregivers. I mean, I remember saying to my boys, I have identical twins, saying to them when they were three, I am not part of the furniture for you to crawl on. I was so frustrated with them, even though they weren't doing anything wrong, because I was on such touch overload. Even moms who work outside of the home full time, they tend to have more bonding touch with their kids, whereas dads are more likely to touch playfully. Meanwhile, most fathers are likely to feel touch starved. So even if you're working outside of the home and are around people all day, for men, there is very little touching, maybe a handshake or an accidental jostle. They don't have intimate relationships with the people they come in contact with, so men don't get the comfort or affection from touch. And women do tend to touch each other more often and are affectionate with more often in a non-sexual way, so they are receiving the benefits of touch. The benefits of touch are not to be underestimated. Biochemically, touch lowers the stress hormone cortisol and stimulates the release of the bonding hormone oxytocin. Now, obviously, depending on the stage of your relationship, touch functions in different ways. Generally, the amount of touch in relationships increases at the beginning of relationships, peaks in early marriage, and then tapers off to a level that is comfortable for both partners. So it's very hard to find this comfort zone when one person in the relationship might be on touch overload and the other person in the relationship is on touch deprivation. So they're on opposite ends of their touch needs being met. And we simply get out of sync with each other's rhythms. Interestingly though, studies have found that while happy couples do tend to touch more, the true indicator of health in a romantic relationship is not how often your partner touches you, but how often he or she touches you in response to their touch. So the stronger the reciprocity, the higher the emotional intimacy and satisfaction in the relationship. So that's one thing that you might want to start noticing. When your partner touches you, do you reciprocate? And if you're not doing it now, it's important, because these bids for affection may become fewer and farther between if they're constantly ignored or disregarded. It's very hard to make a bid for physical touch over and over and over again and have it not be reciprocated. So the question becomes, given all of these challenges we face in connecting physically, how can you keep the intimacy going despite these challenges? After all, every couple deserves a happy, healthy, and fulfilling sex life. That sexual connection in your relationship is what separates you from being roommates and co-parents. The simplest way for you to increase the frequency and quality of your sex is to schedule time for it. It may seem totally unromantic, but it's often necessary to schedule time for this intimate play. We have this misconception that sex is supposed to happen spontaneously, as it does in the beginning of the relationship when everything is new and you can't get enough of each other. Unfortunately, that simply does not work for parents. If you wait for it to happen spontaneously, you might be waiting forever. Most of the couples that I treat are generally resistant to this idea of scheduling sex in the beginning, but after a while they get desperate and they decide to give it a try. After a while, scheduling sex will stop feeling unromantic. Hopefully you'll find that when you know on that day that you're going to have sex or some sort of intimate play, you tend to be extra nice to each other or start to flirt again or maybe think a little bit more about your grooming. Even the act of thinking about sex as you go through your day will prime you for sexual arousal when you finally reunite. You start to anticipate it as something to look forward to rather than something that you have to do. So before you jump into the sack with your partner, now is a good time for you to take stock of your sexual relationship up to this point. it may be difficult or it will require exposing some vulnerability, but it's important for you to look at what's going well and what needs to be changed and what needs to be added. There is a worksheet that goes along with this lesson with questions for you to answer to help you think more deeply about your sex life, your sexual satisfaction, and how to communicate this to your partner. Talking about sex often makes us feel extremely vulnerable, especially if we have some desires or some instances in the past that we're not quite comfortable with yet. So it's really important that you approach anything having to do with sex with a sense of openness and curiosity and without any hint of judgment. It's absolutely critical that your sex life becomes a safe place to explore and to play without judgment. And it's important to mention that even if your sex life is satisfying in terms of frequency, in terms of pleasure, when you're in a very long-term relationship, it's important to continue to check in with each other because, as I mentioned before, what we find pleasurable changes as we age, often because of the changes that our bodies are going through. But also because as we become more comfortable with our sexuality, we may be open to trying new things or exploring new options that perhaps we weren't open to several years ago. I know it's hard to start these conversations, and often my clients say to me, "Melissa, I simply cannot blurt out that all of a sudden I want to start trying this." And I understand that. So one way to bring up something new is simply by saying, "Can we play?" Which allows your partner to know that something new is coming, that he or she needs to be meeting this question with curiosity and openness without judgment. If you're not ready to say, "Can we play?" and describe what you would like, maybe you can find a video that you can show your partner and simply say, "Can I show you something?" Of course, there will be times when perhaps you aren't really willing to try something new. Maybe not today, or maybe not ever. And if that is the case, if your partner has suggested something that you don't think that you can do, rather than thinking about your partner and why they want this, I want you to take a moment or two or several days to think about, what is it about what my partner is asking for that I am so resistant to? So you don't have to do the act, but you do need to work through the resistance or discomfort with it and look at, does it have to do with shame? Does it have to do with vulnerability? You can also ask yourself, maybe I could try out that act by myself or try out that toy by myself first to see if I'm comfortable. Regardless, I want to stress, if you are not willing to try what your partner has suggested, it's absolutely critical that you do not judge your partner for having this want, need, or simple curiosity. It's more about accepting that that is there, and if it's not something that you're willing to play with or engage with at all, then you need to look at what it is about that that makes you so uncomfortable and be able to explain that to your partner. Because maybe your partner can get that need met, whatever he or she wants you to try, through other means that you would be more comfortable with. Whether you are just trying to re-engage in touch with your partner, or you're, you know, more advanced and ready to introduce some new toys and crazy fantasies, it's important to understand that all of this is included in the spectrum of intimacy. Intimacy really means to be truly known by your partner in a way that no one else does. It's built on honesty, trust, self-disclosure, respect, and togetherness. And it's through intimacy that each partner can feel loved and appreciated as a spouse, not connected to any of their other roles. So I hope that you will engage in affection and touching with each other every day. If you have lost your connection with your sexual self, it's time to reconnect. And often, if you're not ready to do that through sex with a partner, it's important to just have sex with yourself and stop depriving yourself of the amazing cocktail of hormones and neurotransmitters that surge when you have an orgasm. And lastly, I really hope that you take the time to look within, to think about what you want from your sex life. I want you to take the time to communicate that with your partner, and I want you to start looking at all sexual experiences as an opportunity for play with your partner and an opportunity to increase the intimacy between the two of you.
Since this is our last lesson, I want to thank you for allowing me to guide you through this process. And again, I know that this is a ton of information, and I do not expect you at all to get it done in a 6-week period. Instead, what I hope is that you will really take your time going through the lessons at your own pace and returning to lessons that apply to you most of all. Any one of these potholes can really have a flare-up at any point in your relationship. That's why I'm so glad that you have lifetime access to this material, so you can go back and review whichever pothole you need to at any time. I also want to reassure you that though this course has come to an end, that doesn't mean that your contact with me has to end as well. If you need me in the future, I am just a click away. You can go to my website, melissacohenlcsw.com, and schedule an appointment if you want to speak with me directly. I'd like to congratulate you on even taking the leap with me to try and make your relationship as strong and as happy as it can be. I want to congratulate you on all the efforts that you've made so far and all the efforts that I know that you will continue to make in the future toward having the best relationship that you can have. Take care of yourself and each other. Thank you so much for joining me on this journey.